You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to an August edition of the True Blue LA Podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. Eric Steven. We're here to talk about the Dodgers. Finally, near the end of this sort of this death stretch of the schedule.
Yeah, well, it's sort of the fact that they got a day off on Monday makes it seem like that. But then they're after like a 17 game stretch, they're like playing the A's tonight, who are like the hottest team in baseball, and then they play the Rockies, who have like somehow like crept back into contention in the NL West. So
it's still 17. Yeah, this seems like the I'm gonna embarrass myself because I don't know what there's a word for the end of dinner amuse-bouche, and I forget what it is. So that's what this A's series kind of feels like.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say this schedule is the. It's not unforgiven, but it's unforgiving, I think. So, I was going
to... You're trying to get a Clint Eastwood joke in there, and couldn't.
No, I was actually going to conflate two Morgan Freeman things, but I declined.
Okay. All things told, as of right now, this second as recording, the Dodgers are behind half a game on the Diamondbacks. But that may change in, just an hour or two. I think if you had said, you're going to come out of this... tied with the Diamondbacks losing, I forget where they were when they started, either half a game or a game ahead, I think you'd be pretty okay with it.
Things, as they say, are fluid. Yeah. The Dodgers are playing the A's, the Diamondbacks are playing the Phillies, who are the NL West leaders at the moment. So, they just played, like we said, the 17th game. So just to recap, it was Brewers... Wait, what was the order?
Phillies?
Brewers, Phillies, Braves, and then Brewers. Back home, and then Astros. It was 17 games, and the Dodgers went 9-8. All those teams are all those teams are in playoff position right now. Except the Dodgers are actually on the outside looking in.
And I think with one game accepting, a lot of either competitive games or blowouts in the Dodgers' favor, which was nice to see. We'll ignore a certain game against the Astros. Not so much.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, last week, we'll just to briefly touch on it, last week was super weird because, the Dodgers had... one game against the Brewers, the final game of that series, where they just exploded. It was 21-5, and so that's crazy. They've only scored 20 in a game twice since moving to LA. I mean that was the second time, and the one game that scored ahead of that was 22, and that was at Coors Field. So it's basically the best game they've had in since moving to LA, and the most runs scored at Dodger Stadium. And then two nights later, they lost to Concord to the Astros 14-0. So it's like it's crazy. But then, also with that 21-run game, even with that, they were only averaging, two runs a game last week outside of that in the other six games. So it's been a weird, offense, up, kind of lots of downs, some ups, but then like we'll get to it a little later. But yeah, it's just super, super sort of weird.
Well, let's just dive into that right now. Like we had Brian Dozier comes over. He's been looking pretty good. The Dodgers had that one night, but as you mentioned, the offense, I think the pitching has looked pretty good, but the offense out again, outside of certain games. But the offense certainly has sore spots. It's not the most even lineup right now. Can you go into a little bit of those slumps? I know we had a question. I'll phrase it in the form of a Twitter question. Richard wants to know, did Max Muncy and Matt Kipp forget how to baseball?
I mean, for a little bit, yes. I mean, like, so they, those are like the two big ones at the moment, just slump-wise. So Muncy, he's not in the lineup Tuesday night. The Dodgers are facing two lefties with the A's, including old friend Brad Anderson on Wednesday. But so Muncy not starting Tuesday. He's 4 for his last 41. He ended last week with 7 consecutive strikeouts. So, like, since the break, 179, 266, 393. So the main, like, it's basically like, I think Dustin Nosler wrote an article on Dodgers Digest about this, about Muncy's plate discipline, like, before and after the break. I looked it up, a little, some numbers. Like, the main thing is, so he has a 7.8% walk rate, which is, like, below average, but relatively normal. This is after the break. Before the break, he was 18.6. Like, he still leads the Dodgers in home runs and walks on the season. So he's been, you know, really good. His strikeout rate since the All-Star break is over just over 40%, which is ridiculously high. But the main reason for that is he's swinging at pitches outside of the zone. Before the break, he swung at just under 20% of swing of balls outside of the zone. Now it's like 31% since the break. So he's chasing a lot, and that's really hurting him. Another sort of small thing is, so before the break, he got first pitch strikes on like 58% of his pitches. So he was getting a lot of pitches to hit there. Since then, it's like down to 44%. It's not a huge difference, but it is relatively. And like he's 8 for 18 with 5 home runs when he decides to, like, when he puts the ball in play on the first pitch. So he does some damage there. He hasn't had as many opportunities to do it, and he's chasing a lot more. So that's one of the problems. Matt Kemp is another. I didn't see his last at bat, but through his first two plate appearances tonight, he's 1 for his last 36. There's no real super, like, underlying reason that I could find, you know, other than just, you know, he's not striking out a ton. He's walked like 5 times during that stretch, not a ton, but like he's not, his strikeout rate's not huge. A big thing earlier in the year was how well he was hitting fastballs and getting a lot. Before the break, he was getting just under 50% fastballs. Since the break, it's like 46%. That's not a huge difference, so it's not like they're pitching him too much differently. I think he's just going through a slump. So I don't know what to make of that. I wanted to throw another player on here, because Chris Taylor, because he's had sort of a weird thing. Like, he struck out 40 times in July, and like on its face, if you think about it, it's a 6-month season, so that's 240 strikeouts for the year, which is nuts. And set a Dodger record. Cody Bellinger did it once last year too. Bellinger had a productive month in July, or when he did it last year. Taylor had a relatively productive month. But he had like a David Young. I didn't include this in our notes. David Young, site member, friend of the show. He had a high BABIP, 397 in July. I looked up, like, he had like 32% line drive rate. It was like almost tied for his highest month of the year. He had a 50% hard hit rate for Fangraphs in the month, and that was his best month of the year. So Dave's question was basically like, can Chris Taylor be productive with that kind of a strikeout rate? And it's like, I think he can, but like, you know, obviously you want it to cut down. But like, if you look at it, his K rate in July was 35%. On the year, it's like 28%. He just strikes out a lot. That's his thing. It's not too differently. And I looked at his, like, sort of same with Muncy, like swinging inside zone, outside. His are relatively stable before and after the break, so I don't think there's any, like, major changes. But, yeah, those are, like, sort of the three slumping guys. But, I mean, we'll get to this a little later, but, like, they have sort of the depth, especially with the Dozier trade, to sort of sit a guy if you have to, and since they have so many people to work in.
Well, we can talk about that now. We've got two questions sort of concerning the depths and the lineup's plans. Oswaldo wants to know, what do you think of the constant changes to lineup and batting order? This is, I think, a question that comes up a lot.
All the time. Yeah.
When they're, you keep the same lineup and there's a little bit of a struggle, why aren't they changing things up? When you're changing things up a lot and there's a little bit of a struggle, why are you changing so many things? Sometimes that has merit. That was a big, I think, valid complaint of Don Mattingly sometimes, and sometimes it was a completely invalid complaint. Where do you think we are with that now?
Well, it's one of those things too. Like, it kind of depends on the roster too. Like,
and what changes you're making, I think.
Right, and like generally, like I would say of all the things like on a daily basis that gets complained about, a proportion or like a disproportional rate to its actual value is like his lineup construction. And my basic thing is like, are the right eight guys starting? And it changes, like, you know, I don't really care about the order so much as it's who's starting it. And like, even then, like, guys get rest and the game's different, like, than it was when I was growing up, or even like maybe when you were growing up too. There's not a lot of guys playing like literally every single day anymore. They like teams work rest in. Dodgers are like especially like ardent in this. They try to do it, you know, give guys rest. And I don't know. I mean, it's just the way the game is sort of moving in that direction. And so I just think that's where we're at. And also, like, when Dozier was acquired, Dave Roberts said basically, like, you know, he's going to start like against lefties. And then, you know, he'll get some days off against righties and things like that. So he clearly, like, outlined, like, he's not going to play, like, 100% of the time. He's gonna get some time off. And then, like, literally, he hit home runs in his first two games with the Dodgers. And then he sat the next day against a righty. And, I had so many people, like, why isn't Dozier in there? This is classic Roberts. You're an idiot. It's like, well, no, like, this is how it's going to happen. So I looked at this. So the first thing about the constant changes, like the Dodgers, if you go on Baseball Reference, you can look at their lineups. I didn't look at the batting order. That, like I said, I'm not concerned at all about that. But the just different lineups, like different groupings of eight position players. They're at 85 different lineups through 113 games. So they're on pace for 122. That's a pretty high number.
Yeah.
They had 110 last year. Which was high for them, and but then you look at the Astros, the world champion Astros had 112. So the year before, the Dodgers had 93 different lineups, and the world champion Cubs had 101. So like, this is just the way the game is now. Look at this year. So the Dodgers 85 lineups. Look at the five NL playoff teams at the moment. The Dodgers are, like I said, outside looking in, starting Tuesday. Diamondbacks 92 lineups. That's more. Brewers 104. I think that leads. I didn't check every single team, but just the playoff teams for now. The Cubs 70, pretty low. The Phillies and Braves are at the opposite end of the spectrum. They have 55 lineups, and Braves only 47. So, you know, it's a wide range, but like, there's a lot of teams employing different lineups and having success. So, I don't think it's an issue really, and it's something they preach. And look, if you look at the way this roster is right now, the Dodgers, like, outside of Austin Barnes, they have, like, basically 10. And if you count Kike, especially against lefties, maybe not against righties, they have, at a minimum, 10 players who deserve to start every day, and maybe 11 if you count Kike. So I'll just give you a quote from Roberts last week, because this just sort of sums it up. Quoting Roberts here, we have a deep bench, and if they're not starting, or they're not starting, but that doesn't mean they're not going to contribute at some point in the game. That's the message to anyone that's sitting that particular day. They all want to be in there, and they all have their own right, have a case to be in the lineup that night. But there are only eight positions in the lineup. So, I mean, that's basically what they're at. They have, you know, 10-plus guys who need to start, and they have eight spots in the lineup. So it's just an issue, and they're working it out. And it's like, if you're struggling, you're probably going to get extra time. Like, they're probably more likely to rest guys with injuries. Yasiel Puig had a little oblique thing. He missed a couple days. He's back in the lineup tonight. Muncy's struggling, so he said, well, it's a lefty tonight, so he was probably going to sit in some of the cases anyway. So, but that's just where they're at. I mean, I don't really necessarily see it as an issue. It's something they've done the last at least 3 years, especially with a deep roster, and it's worked. So I don't think it's an issue.
Yeah, I think when this gets complained about, a lot of times the actual complaint is either that you are starting at someone who has worn out the welcome of, like, sometimes you have to ride out the slumps, but sometimes it's just showing you that they don't have it, or there's someone hot that you're not starting. And I think last week the sort of concrete example I saw was, why aren't we starting Dozier every day, or why are we still running Max Muncy out there? Both of which seem kind of very small sample size, short-sighted, kind of not quite there. Maybe Max Muncy's getting there. I don't know. Specifically, yeah. We have a question from Razball. Sort of a question. Muncy's PT now. So playing, what is Muncy's playing time going forward?
I mean, he's just in the mix. Like, yeah. He's going to – he might sit more against lefties. They didn't really have much of a platoon split, and plus they needed him, so he was starting almost every day before. I would imagine now with Dozier, it's less of an opportunity for him to play second. So he's going to play against righties mostly. But he's going to get playing time still, and they're just going to – everyone's going to rotate. He's just – and, like, we've talked about this, like, all year, too. Like, you know, is Max Muncy really a 1,000 OPS guy? You know, like, he's down to, like, 940, I think, right now. So it's like, you know, he's still, all due respect, playing above his skis, in my opinion. So there was room for a correction here. But, like, he could still be a productive player. Like, he's shown great plate discipline and great power, and he could still be a productive player doing that, even if he's not hitting as well as he was. So, but he's gonna get spots for sure, starts for sure. So, unless he slumps, then he won't. But I think he's still gonna play. And then just about the other thing too, like, look, there's always guys you're gonna. It looks like they're playing too long, like Forsythe. Got a really long leash, didn't work out. He got traded for Dozier, but, like, he had started only something like 8 of the previous, like, 26 games. So he was basically relegated to a part-time status, or, you know, like a bench player at that point. So at some point, they finally did pull the plug, but, yeah, it took a while. And some guys, like, you know, you might think, like, why aren't they starting? But then on the other case, it's like, Jock Peterson, like, they showed extraordinary patience for him. I know they sent him down last year, but there was, like, no guarantee that he was going to make the team this year, and they showed extraordinary patience, and he's having a really good year. So sometimes it works out. That's why they show the patience in this, because these aren't willy-nilly, like, decisions, you know. They see what the player's working on, like, in, like, batting practice. They have a lot more sophisticated data that's available publicly, like on, like, batted ball things, and it's more than, like, StatCast stuff. If a guy's, like, hitting the ball hard and he's just getting unlucky or something, if a guy's in a slump like Muncy, I'm sure he's working on things, and it's just a matter of, like, a feel that day or how he's progressing. So I don't think these are decisions made in a vacuum, and so, you know, it's a tough call because, like I said, some guys works out, some guys it doesn't, but I mean, that's welcome to being a manager, right? Like, that's part of the decisions you have to make. And that's, like, one of the things, like, it's hard, you'd be hard pressed to find a team's fan base that doesn't, like, complain about their manager somehow, like, lineup wise or probably bullpen wise or something like that.
On the other side of things, talking about the pitching a little bit, less sort of complaints or concerns there, since we all kind of know it's Kenley and then a bunch of pretty good to medium. I think the news there is how many guys are still on the disabled list and may be able to come help the Dodgers for the stretch run. So I have a list from Roscoe, who specifically wants to know about Ryu, Santana, Stripling, Goodell, Fields, and Sengrani. And I don't know, maybe there's even more names that we're missing.
Yeah, I added a couple names to this, like, just making my own notes for this. But just Ryu is the freshest in the mind in that he's on his, like, sort of rehab assignment. He made his second rehab start tonight. He was in Class A last Thursday four scoreless. It looked pretty sharp. I think Robert said he threw like 91, which is where we use generally at, maybe a little higher. But for his first rehab start, that was pretty good. And he was super sharp. And then tonight, he went to Reno with AAA Oklahoma City, so he's sort of progressing. I think five innings, one run was what I saw, three strikeouts. And, you know, by all accounts, was sort of getting into a groove. So he's, like, all along, Dave Roberts has said he's going to need, like, four or five rehab starts. If you look at it, the 30 days, his 30 days are up conveniently on August 31st. Like, if he goes the maximum rehab assignment, so he could just be activated September 1st. But, like, it could be the way he's pitching, like, you could see them, like, possibly activating him a little before that, just because he's you know, I'd consider him in contention to start in the playoffs, even as good as some of the other guys are pitching. So, you know, if he's – we're on August 7th right now. So if he has – let's give him the maximum – or not maximum, but just give him three more rehab starts. That puts him at, like, at least the 22nd. So then he's probably wouldn't get activated until the 5 days after that. So at least 27th, factor in a few off days. So, again, it's probably looking like September 1st, roughly for him. That's what I would guess, maybe a week before at best. You know, Ross Stripling, he's going to start one of the games in Colorado. This was like, you never want to say it's not a fake injury. You know, I want to couch this in that, but it's a use of the disabled list for roster manipulation. I think it's why he went on the disabled list more than anything. He had, well, I think they called it toe inflammation. And so I think he's going to be the minimum 10 days. He's going to go Thursday, probably in Colorado. Maybe, I guess it could be Friday, but it's looking like Thursday. So he's basically back. Alex Wood went on the DL on Sunday. He was the last starter, or like main starter, to not get the DL this year. So that was sort of a planned thing, I think. He had a start on Saturday, I guess Friday, where he went six innings. He was actually going to go out to pitch the seventh because Justin Verlander, who was dominant that night, was still in the game and he was going to bat. And so they were going to have Wood face Verlander for one batter only in the seventh and then come out, but he felt something in his hamstring. So they pulled him during warmups of the seventh. So at the time you're like, why are they doing this? Seems weird, but so they said technically he has adductor tendonitis, which is hamstring region, not quite the hamstring, but it's all like in that basically cramping in his leg. So it sounds fake, but I think it's legit, but he's probably a minimum 10 days guy. The one other, like, sort of, you know, if we're talking about like bullpen help that wasn't on the list was Julio Urias. He's pitched a couple times for the Arizona League. He's basically going to be a multi-inning reliever this year. I mean, long-term, he's still a starter. But he's still in the Arizona League. His rehab started on the 30th of July. So the latest he could be activated, or they have to make a decision, would be August 29th. So, you know, you can see him sort of progressing, and if things go well, he could be up by the last part of August to sort of get ready for the playoffs and be a member of that bullpen. As far as the other sort of bullpen guys, like, Eric Gaddell, he's probably a minimum 10-day guy. He went on so last week they activated Turner Thursday and John Axford joined the team Friday. So they had to make two moves. We talked about this last week about who exactly do they send down for Turner, and it ended up being Chase Utley was on the deal. But the story behind that was, so it's Thursday before the game. They hadn't yet made the move to activate the corresponding move for Turner. And Dave Roberts was saying we're between a position player and a reliever and sort of deciding who's going to go on the DL because they were, you know, their candidates. And then he said, well, is the other person going to probably be the move for Axford? He was kind of noncommittal, but basically at yes. And he said after the game, yes. But like Eric Gaddell, he pitched that Thursday and then went on the DL the next day. So like, they were considering putting him on the DL, but then he was still good enough to pitch that night, and then he still pitched. So I think it's more of a minor rest type thing for him. So he's probably minimum 10 days. Tony Cingrotti got a cortisone shot last week. he's still like up in the air. I have really no idea with him. Josh Fields, not quite sure what he's doing. He could be on a, you know, resting him now, using him later type of a thing. Not really sure of an update on him. Dennis Santana, he's throwing again. He tweeted out something where he was at Camelback Ranch like a week ago, starting a throwing program. He can't expect anything from him this year. So I don't expect much for him.
Okay, so Dennis Santana, World Series hero, lock it in. Anytime you get too certain about something, I get excited. So
right. Well, and like I said, you know, I was, you know, been trying to like downplay Urias this year, and but they're showing, time they talk about it, they're like, oh, he's throwing 94 in the Arizona League. All right, like, time to get excited again. let's have him hit an affiliate first before we ramp that up a little bit.
One last injury note. Not a factor this season, but let's talk about our cyborg shortstop.
That's right. Yeah. So he hasn't quite hit arbitration yet, so he's not quite the $6 million man yet. But Corey Seager already out for the year after having Tommy John surgery. He had hip surgery, I think today, in New York. And it was one of those things. I heard Robert's pregame today. You know, basically the bottom line is this: the timetable is basically the same. He's not going to do like any baseball activities until January, which was roughly when he was probably going to do it anyway. You know, they say he's ready for spring training. You probably have to factor in like they're going to take it slow. So, you know, to say he's going to be ready for opening day might be a stretch, but I would imagine relatively soon after that, could be ready for opening day, but I wouldn't bet on it. But yeah, so they basically waited for the healing part of his sort of rehab for the elbow to finish up before they did another operation, which is what they are doing with the hip. So he sort of tweaked his hip on a play in April, I believe, on a throw, I think. I can't remember exactly the circumstances, but this was what sort of that is cleaning up. It was arthroscopic surgery, so we'll see. But yeah, anytime surgery is not ever good, under the circumstances, it doesn't change much. He's still like sort of the same timetable, which is basically hopefully opening day next year, but certainly the first third of the season.
A couple other small notes before we start to wrap things up. First, you just want to talk a little bit about some minor league promotions going on in the Dodger system.
Oh yeah. So last week was a little bit of moving day. Part of it was related to, I think these guys were going to move anyway, but it just worked out with the timing of a lot of the Dodgers trades. Like the team in AA Tulsa got hit the hardest in terms of like prospects loss. So, so last week, Gavin Lux, the Dodgers former first round pick shortstop, got promoted. And also Dustin May, a pitcher who has fiery red hair, who like leads the Dodgers minors in strikeouts this year. He's been really good. It was for Rancho. They both got promoted to Tulsa, and then Will Smith, who was in Tulsa, got promoted to AAA. So the thing with that is not just for Will Smith, but it like frees up more catching chances for K-Bear Ruiz in Tulsa. So that's good because they were sort of maneuvering like Ruiz would DH sometimes, Smith would play third sometimes. So they were already maneuvering a little bit, but that frees up catcher a little more for Ruiz, and then Will Smith gets a chance in AAA. Lux has done the best so far. I think he has a hit in all five games. He's like 8 for 20. I think he homered in his first game. Will Smith struggled so far. He's only played 3 games. He's 0 for 11 with a walk. Dustin May, I think he got hit around a little bit. I think he gave up 4 or 5 runs. In his first start, he's starting tomorrow. So, but I mean, look, it's one start, whatever. I think he's going to be fine. But so those are just the three sort of, relatively highly ranked. I would imagine in the Dodger system, I think given like the promotions, I think those guys are all top five. They all advance a level. So that's a good thing.
And the last note before we do some questions from Craig, for those lucky enough to have Sportsnet LA, so I being in Kansas City, I can watch Dodgers whenever I want, but I can't watch any of the fine extra programming. So this is out of my purview, but the documentary on the 1988 team is going on. And have you seen it yet? Did you go to a preview for this?
No, the one I saw, so it's the 30th anniversary of the 88 team, and boy, is it a busy year for documentaries on that team, and I'm not complaining at all because it's my favorite team of all time. I was 12, it was wheelhouse stuff for me. But yeah, so MLB Network was the one I saw a little bit ahead of time. That one's already aired. That was a good, it was only like a half, or I think it was half hour, maybe 40, I forget. No, it was about 45 minutes. Or, I mean, it stretched over an hour, but yeah. Sportsnet LA is doing a three-part documentary. They're calling it Dodgermentary, which, frankly, this is their, like, fifth year of existence. They should have been doing a lot of these, like, already. Like, I'm not, you know, but, like, they're barely on TV, so understandable that maybe they didn't want to pour the production into it, whatever. But, no, this looks like a really good thing. I haven't seen any of it at all. But it's a three-part thing, I think. First episode's Wednesday, and then I think it's over the next few weeks that they're going to air it. And then Fox Sports 1 is doing another documentary on the 88 World Series or 88 team, and I think they're airing that on October 10th, like sort of during the playoffs. So that'll be interesting. Yeah, so it's a busy time. I have no information on the Sportsnet LA one, but I am looking forward to watching it. But unfortunately, like you mentioned, if you don't have Sports in LA, it's kind of rough because it's not going to be anywhere else. But if you have it, it's something worth watching, I'm sure.
Ready for the questions from Craig?
Yep.
All right, so we've got five questions. One is just for you. First question, which film series do you enjoy more, Mission Impossible or the Bourne films? Or do you have a different action-adventure film franchise, excluding all the comic book ones? That excludes most of mine. I have seen one of the Fast and the Furious movies, I think three of the Mission Impossibles, and only one of the Bourne. Not that I'm opposed just to them. Like I think I've enjoyed every one I've seen. Just they're not my biggest draw.
The Bournes are pretty good. I think I was so surprised when the first one came out because like Matt Damon action star, that's weird. But then like it's same thing with like Liam Neeson, like. Old ass kicker, you know, basically that kind of a thing, like with Taken. But yeah, I still haven't seen the last two Mission Impossibles, although I'll probably see the new Mission Impossible at some point this week. But that seems to have a better hit rate for me than the Bournes, so I would probably go with that. I can't think of it like another franchise or whatever that comes to mind that I like more. I'm not, like I said, not really into the comic book movies for the most part. So I don't really have those there to compete. But yeah, so I probably would take the Mission Impossible over Bourne.
Yeah, and I'm discluding Star Wars stuff, comic book stuff, because that is much more my wheelhouse. Yeah. Two is a simple one. Headphones, corded, wireless, earphones, earbuds, what are we using? You and I both have over-the-ear studio headphones for this, but you know, if you're just walking on the street, what do you want to use?
Yeah, like these are, this is, oh yeah, like I said, over the ear corded for this, but in the last like 6 months or so, I finally broke down and bought a pair of wireless earbuds or headphones, I guess, over like just they're better than earbuds basically, but they're wireless, and it's great. Like, if I go, like, so there's no question it's that. It's wireless over-corded any day. But, yeah, so, like, go out walking or doing whatever. I could just have that in the ear, have the phone in the pocket. I don't have to worry about, do I have enough cord? If I move my head, it's going to yank the earphones out. Don't have to worry about that at all. The sound is great. I did learn... when I drove to Colorado with my aunt and uncle, then I flew back, and that's a long drive. And like, I wasn't quite sure how much battery power, or I mean, how much like, you know, battery life this had. But yeah, it ran out pretty quickly. So I had to like find a way to charge it, but it was like a game of like trying to like, oh, do I have enough juice to listen to another podcast? And then, but yeah, no, they've been great. I love them. So clearly, wireless for me.
Yeah, I was wired only just because every pair of wireless headphones I tried, I did not like. Either the battery life wasn't enough or the connectivity was really bad. Finally got a pair. I have a pair of Beats X, which work really, really well. I'm very, very happy with them. And it doesn't sound like it would make that big of a difference when you start using them. Like, oh, it, you know, my cord's long enough, it's fine. But I am a big fan and a convert. So unless I'm doing something super high fidelity where I really need to hear super crystal clear, where I might still go with the corded wireless all the way. And earbuds.
Do you ever download the movie High Fidelity and then just listen to it?
Okay. So we screwed this up last time, so Craig's giving us another chance. Currently, five Dodgers have he's burying the lead here. I'll just read his question. Hopefully it makes sense. Five Dodgers, Grandal, Bellinger, Kemp, Peterson, and Hernandez are three or less home runs away from joining Muncy with 20 or more home runs. Justin Turner has six. Will Turner get hit four more, so 10, before two more Dodgers get the 20?
Yes.
I say no, but barely. I think Grandal and Bellinger both get the 20 before Turner gets the 10, but it'll be close. I have full faith in Justin Turner.
All right.
So since 2006, only once did the Dodgers fail to have at least five hitters with 20 or more doubles. That was in 2011. Currently, the Dodgers have three. That's Chris Taylor, Cody Bellinger, and Jock Peterson. Six would seem pretty doable in 2018. Can they do more than that? So to break this down, after that, you have Matt Kemp with 19, Yasiel Puig with 18, and Yasmani Grandal with 16. Those all seem like locks.
Yeah, and then, so the seventh would be
Max Muncy.
Yeah, so he's at 13. I was thinking he's for sure doable, but it goes back to what we were talking about, like, unless he somehow just completely like loses playing time and doesn't do it. But I think he's doable for sure. The dark horse for me is Justin Turner again. He's at 9. He hit his ninth tonight. So he needs 11 more in 48 games. That's a 36 double pace over the full year. That's a pretty hefty pace, but like I think it's doable, especially if it gets hot. So he's sort of the round like the underdog for me there, but I kind of like his chances.
I will go barely yes, just I think because of Muncy or Turner. But who knows? Like the fact that once we get to September, you get the September call-ups, playing time gets even more mixed around than it is now. It'll be interesting to see, but I think one of them will pull it out.
Yeah.
All right, you ready for your trivia question?
Yeah, and I'm gonna just word of warning. I'm gonna do terribly at this.
Well, I do appreciate that Craig generally knows when to only ask you these trivia questions, because I would have gotten, I might have guessed one correctly. Yeah. And that's the fifth one. So what we're doing is middle names, baseball player middle names. Craig says that one thing he loved about baseball cards were that they included their middle names. Going back to Eric's wheelhouse, so cards, and we'll stick to Hall of Famers who played in the mid-'80s to early aughts. So that's your wheelhouse, Eric. Give the correct middle name for the following. And he texted me the answers. And Craig notes that Don Russ was the best for always showing the middle names.
They did. They had a lot of info in that little, in like the bio area, plus the full name.
So I'm going to give you a shot at a guess. And if you're wrong, I will give you the middle initial and give you a second guess. Otherwise, we'll move on. Sound good?
Yeah. Yep.
Ricky Henderson.
Okay. So this is so bad. Like, man, I only know one of these five, and probably the bonus one. But I want to say he's Lewis.
Ron.
All right.
So H.
Okay, you know, before I.
I know you Lewis, almost got there. I was very excited.
Was like, I thought I was going to start with H, and but for the life of me, but I want to say it's like Haynes or something, but I don't know.
You're there. Henley.
Okay, wow.
Eddie Murray. And I almost just said his middle name. So.
If I didn't get Eddie Murray, I'd be so mad. But I'm fairly certain it's Clarence.
Correct. So that's one.
Yeah, he's my all time favorite player. So if I didn't get that, I would have logged off.
Greg Maddux.
Okay, so my brother's name is Greg, and his middle name is Alan. And for the life of me, when I was thinking about this earlier, the name that kept coming to my head was Greg Alan Maddux, but that can't be the case just because that's my brother, and I think that's why it was in my head. But that's the answer. I'm going with Alan.
Correct.
It is. Okay. Wow. All right.
Maybe that was a thing. There's certain first and last name combos that are just classic. Next, Frank Thomas. Okay. I keep looking at the answer sheet and almost saying it.
So I don't have any idea on this, although I will say this. The first thing that popped into my head was Patrick Ewing, whose middle name is Aloysius. And Frank Thomas is basically an NBA-sized / NFL-sized baseball player. So I have no idea with Frank Thomas, so I'm going to say Aloysius.
E.
Edward?
Yeah. All right. So two and a half. Okay. Last and maybe the one I would have gotten right. I definitely knew this at some point. I don't know if I would have reached into the punch bowl or not. Randy Johnson.
Yeah, and this is one of those, like, I don't remember, like,
one of my favorite non-Dodgers. Almost a Dodger. I followed that trade rumor in 2004, I think.
Yeah, exactly. There was so much, like, Arizona's GM was, like, saying DePodesta was, like, stalling or, like, dragging it out. I forget the thing, but Randy Johnson. I'm trying to think of, like, I'll just say Richard, but I have no idea.
D as in Delta.
Randy D. Johnson. David?
David it is. So we'll round you up to three. And then a bonus question. What is Bo Jackson's full legal name?
I don't know if I'm going to get the suffix right, but he's Vincent Edward Jackson, and I think it's Junior.
I was just given Vincent Edward Jackson, so I will look that up real quick while we close things out. So just a funny side story with this. I got these text messages before I read the email, and I was really confused. I just kind of like glance at my phone and just see Vincent Edward Jackson, Frank Edward Thomas. Like, what?
what a very odd text to get from Greg just randomly, right? So the reason that is always stuck in my head. 89 All-Star game, Bo Jackson's sort of coming out party to the world. Everyone knew about him because he won the Heisman and he was sort of a big deal. But, like, he hit the leadoff home run and Vin Scully. Ronald Reagan was, like, calling the game in the booth with Vin Scully. They were having a conversation and then Bo Jackson, like, interrupted things by hitting a rocket home run. And I just remember this. If you watch the highlight, if you get the full highlight with Reagan in there, he's like talking to Vin Scully, and then all of a sudden he goes, "Oh!" like he just has this like reaction to it, and then Vin Scully has the great Bo Jackson says hello, and then Bo Jackson ended up winning the MVP of that game, and I just remember like I think Vin Scully signed off the broadcast with this or very close to the end, and he said from Vincent Edward Scully. I forget if he said his name first or what, but it was basically Vincent Edward Scully and Vincent Edward Jackson. That's how I remember it. So,
he was not a junior. He was named after Vince Edwards, an actor.
Oh.
So there you go. Okay. So it was named after Vince Edwards, but not in the junior awarding way. So that's the episode.
Wow. The hints, I was amazed that I got lucky with the hints.
Getting Greg Maddux, I was secretly rooting for you to change your mind at the last second just so I can needle you a little bit more, but yeah. I'm glad you got it.
I told you before we got on, I knew Jackson and Murray for sure, so I thought for sure I was only going to get two of the six, and I ended up getting three, so pretty happy about that. But yeah, that's it for this week. Can't imagine there'll be trades next week, but we'll figure out something to talk about. But thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
We'll be right back.